So it's lovely to have Lawrence with me on the podcast today. Lawrence is a professional photographer from Scotland. So welcome, Lawrence.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on here.
Do you want to just give the listeners a little sort of overview of what you do, what your life looks like?
All right. Well, I'm from Aberdeen and I studied photography briefly in Edinburgh and then in down in Salisbury. And basically the course I studied was how to be a commercial photographer. It was really, you know, punting out commercial photographers. We had good links with the industry in London. So we had a lot of people coming along, professional photographers coming along to our course. And that really made that link between education and industry that I think a lot of people struggle with. It, you know, they would come and see you and you'd be working with these top photographers and it sort of broke down that barrier. And some of them would say, oh, come and see, we might get you some assisting or something after. So I thought, I can actually do this. So I didn't want to go to London. It was all just a bit too much of a rat race there. So I ended up in Edinburgh. My girlfriend at that time was a graphic designer in Edinburgh. So I basically had a rather sneaky way into the commercial industry as a photographer. And I began assisting. And then after about a year, I just was getting asked to do work myself. So I ended up setting up a sort of basic studio there, renting somewhere small. And that sort of burgeoned from there. And I think this is one, two, three, four, the fourth studio I got now. And I work for a broad mix of clients. It's varied a lot over the years. It used to be a lot more sort of studio things, photographing like things for banks and things like this that now people can buy from libraries that someone in Mexico is shooting and they sell for $3, you know, so it's that side of things is gone. So I'm always out shooting some corporate things, a lot of sort of fine art type things, theater, and also for a lot for with the drinks industry up here with the whiskey. So I shoot a lot, and I think this is how I've made a sort of connection with yourself, Margaret, is because I shoot a great deal with probably my best client, which is the Harris Distillery. So I'm up there right from before the distillery was even built. I had a sort of lovely connection with them. And they're a little bit more like a family than they are a client. They're extremely lovely people to work with. And they very much put their trust into me. And I very much have my trust in them. So that's lovely. And it gets me up in this beautiful environment. So that's really the sort of mainstay of what I'm doing commercially. A lot of theatre posters, that kind of thing. I love doing that. Very creative work. I also sort of have this other side where I'm shooting fine art projects, which are a whole series of them, which you might sort of see if you look me up, you'd see a sort of lot of quite strikingly unusual, surreal imagery that is all, I think, in part based in the fact my dad and my grandfather were both magicians. I feel like I did follow down that route after all, albeit with a camera. So there's a lot of sort of work in that direction. Yeah, so that's where
Brilliant.
I am at.
So we met on the beach, didn't we? Briefly, I think I just turned up for a swim or something and you were photographing for the distillery and I just came up to say hello. So it was nice to meet you and make that connection, wasn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I love that side of things.
Yeah, I really enjoy meeting other photographers and people that are, you know, creatives. So I think it's really important that we connect and we share and we talk like this. So I wanted to just get a picture of what you did. And so I was looking through your work and it's obviously you're very busy commercially and your work's amazing. But so I hadn't realized until I dug a little bit deeper and I went through your links that there's another side of you, which is your Instagram Shape Nature. And I was like, oh my goodness, I didn't expect this. So, you know, you don't expect that. But then I suppose we all have a release from work, don't we?
Yes, it doesn't feel like a release from it. It just feels like a sort of extension of it or another version of I love my photography work. I love doing it. But then I've got just a little bit addicted to making land art as well. And I kind of just, they all merge in my mind. And I never really kind of conceived of myself. And I'm not someone who's sort of trying to express, you know, make political points or, you know, in the way of, like, I call it a lot of a lot of lovely work you see in the fine art world today. But for me, a lot of the time, a lot of it is art of the intellect. It's very like it's a mind game. It's a game that's going on. And mine is all heart, all spirit. It's just an expression of like who I am inside, and it's what you see is what you get. It's quite expressive in that way, and it, yeah, it's been great to find my feet and that sort of land art side, and I'm now trying to sort of, in a sense, split my time, and I'm increasingly finding more time is being split and doing things like workshops and festivals. I'm just off to two different festivals in the next month, so that's taking me away from work, and it sort of affects my regular income, because whereas I do get like expenses and things covered for these festivals, it's not like I'm paid to do them, but all my colleagues, all my friends that are at these other festivals, most of them are full-time land artists, and albeit it's a frugal living, but you know, I'm like, the older I am, the more I'm like, hey, that's all you need, you know. Like, I know I'm really into science, and it says the data on this is clear, which is, you know, once your immediate needs are met, there's no correlation between happiness and wealth. To have more money. And if you look at the people who are the wealthiest and these sort of grossly overpaid people in the world, they're not really very smiley people, are they? They don't look very happy. They don't do anything except sort of stick their head down and work. And and it's not a good model, and it's deeply unethical and imbalanced and things. So I think these days I'm like, well, as long as I'm paying the bills, as long as I'm getting by, and if I do the thing that sort of where my heart lies, then mm-hmm. that would just be great, and trusting in that process as well.
It's a balance, isn't it? I think there's got to be balance, and sometimes the balance gets tips towards the work, and you get you know, for necessity or just because you get into that way of being, and then you don't realize that you've got not much actual life left. So it's good to hear that. But can I just rewind you there a little bit? Do you want to just describe what you mean by land art? People can go and look at your accounts and see it as themselves. I think it's beautiful. But do you want to describe what that is, what that process is?
Okay. Well, a lot of people might have heard, anyone who's drawn into the sort of art side of things will often have heard of very famous Scottish land artist who's really sort of predominant in that field called Andy Goldsworthy. I don't know if he still is, but he's based down in Dumfriesshire, and just a spectacular artist. And right from when sort of teenage age, I sort of remember seeing him on a sort of wee Scottish documentary at the time and just being blown away. But it's funny, I didn't really sort of make the connection to do that myself. And then in 2018, I went along to something that a friend had said they were heading to, which was the European Land Art Festival, which was along in Dunbar. Uh-huh. And this was run by a good friend of mine who we now work together on this. You know, he's the guy who set the thing up, and I help him with like website and photographs and things like this. So we work together on the European Land Art Festival, or ELAF as it's known. And that going to that in 2018 was the sort of weird experience, because I walked in there. I've always had a bit of sort of synchronicity or sort of intuition. And I went in there and I was like, oh my God, why am I on this side of the barrier watching them? And I spent the day being grumpy watching these artists going, I'm in the wrong place. I'm supposed to be over there. Like, and it was weird how it was like, I felt annoyed that I, you know, it was that extent, that connection was so strong of, I'm doing this. This is me. You know, I didn't like being an observer of it. And so even on the second day, I went back and I joined in then, you know, because it was a very open, inclusive thing. Basically, there was all kinds of activities going on, but the land art itself it sort of covers a broad gamut of things, which is basically taking elements within nature. It can be stacking of stones, which is something I sort of really got drawn to doing at that time for a couple of years. It's something I completely never do anymore. I've just gone down a different kind of route. I think, and maybe in some part because it upsets some people, you know, if you leave that there. I think is, you know, there's a sort of bit of a reaction to this, and people can get a little bit angry about it disturbing the environment. And I can kind of understand a little bit of that, but at the same time, I think if someone's saying that and they own a car, you know, it's kind of hard to kind of see the balance of how they can make that judgment. But it can get a bit excessive. But I tend to like knocking things over when it's finished, so it all returns back to the sort of entropy. It comes back to its natural state. But then I've since then have shifted to working on the ground, which is mandala-like designs, and that's taking anything from pebbles to bigger stones to seashells, or if I'm in a forest, and leaves. Or it's fantastic going in and finding the freshly fallen leaves that are orange or yellow, making up a kind of like a spiral pattern with them, and then because I'm a photographer, I feel like I've got this sort of secret weapon. I may not be the finest land artist, but I do know how to get the really nice picture of it, which makes a difference. I've got the right lenses. I sometimes bring in a light just if it's in a dull part, or you want to get this little tickle of sort of sunshine effect coming through. So I really enjoy the photography side of it as well, but mostly the process of gathering and creating and sort of being in that moment has been profoundly changing for me. And my whole thought process about what I do and who I am and things has shifted over the years because of making land art in particular. It's in my mind all the time. I'm constantly like, I'd love to go out today. It's really, I'm so addicted to it. So then, striking that balance between that and work, as you said, that's a little tricky.
So, I just think it's incredible. And I hadn't really come across much. Actually, I do remember from my childhood in Holland, I remember going to the beach, and it's slightly different. I must be named for it. When you did beach sculptures in the sand. Incredible, like not just huge, like things that go on for days. And I remember being absolutely enthralled by those. So that's the only time I've really come across this. And obviously, on the Isle of Skye, where people have stacked stones in the Fairy Glen. But I've seen stones on a lot of beaches and bays, which is, it's nice. But what you're doing is it's going one step further. And I'm interested in the process for you and the why and how it makes you feel when you're doing it. Is it similar to photography, where it's a mindful process? Is it about being in nature? Is it about looking, observing patterns? Yes. Is it all of those?
Yes, I'd say it is. I'd say anything where I'm sort of expressing myself like creatively, like in the photography side of things, I love that. But nearly most, unless you're doing something quite sort of serene like landscapes, and especially the work I do, doing theatre posters or even my personal work in photography, it usually involves a model or someone, a friend dressed up in some crazy outfit or something, us doing something. It's not a relaxing moment, And I remember watching another wonderful photographer, Rodney Smith, who makes these beautiful ethereal and sort of very considered and amazing photographs with models. He's in the past, he's died now, but beautiful images. And I remember someone in an interview saying, so is it all very serene and everything at the moment? And he says, oh, hell no, we're all screaming and shouting. It's all very frantic at the time. You're like, no, head back, turn the other way. It's all a little bit full on. And that's how these things are. But there's a kind of energy to that, and I love it. I love the theater. I love just shooting for them and all the theater people, and I love that vibe. So there's a real excitement to that. But it's not that relaxing. You've got all this gear. I use a lot of equipment, lenses and lights and things like this, and that's quite intense. And a lot of stuff to carry and things. So to get to go out into a forest with just a camera, myself, and my hands to pick the leaves or whatever, that is just, it's just like, it's so enriching, because all that other stuff gets to sort of stay aside, and the whole thing has become much more of a meditative process over time. And there's the best example of it I can give is, at one point I was in the forest, and it was just a year ago, maybe a little bit later, and the color of the leaves were just perfect in that they're turning, and you've got this, the beech leaves transition from this sort of lime green to this darker green to a yellow, and then into oranges, and then finally quite a reddish color. So just choosing and picking these leaves out, and I was laying out this spiral, and I just, in the picking of the leaves, I just slowing myself down and being very conscious like really being aware of what you're doing. It's like not following your thoughts, or you're just conscious of the thing you're doing alone, and you're not wondering, your mind's not wondering, you know, tend not to listen to music or things at that time or something else. It's just, there's the focus on that. And in that moment, I kind of gave myself the permission to kind of rest in that moment. And from that, practice I've generated in over lockdown, and that was so present there, of gratitude. Yeah. And really, you know, we can often come back to a sort of slightly, this is wrong, that's wrong, that's whatever. We don't often reflect on all the amazing things that we do have going on. And that is hugely important to me. So when I'm picking those leaves, I think, like, I've got a list a mile long that's saying, I get to do this. You know, I get to do this. That's my wife's line. She swims in the sea, and sometimes she thinks, oh, it's 7 a.m. Oh, it looks a bit cold. It looks raining. I'm going to go down to the sea. And she says, remember, I get to do this. You know, some people are in wheelchairs, and that's not going to be an easy thing for them to do. And remember that, and to make those conscious decisions. So it's not always easy to bring these things to mind, but I tried to do that. And in that moment in particular of picking those leaves, I got such a state of joy, because like making the decision, I'm going to allow myself to do that. You know, when you're out in those places, you need to cherish those moments and to make a conscious decision to do it. And that's what I did in gathering those leaves. And it was wonderful. And I laid out the leaves, and I was laying out the pattern on it. And that is almost sort of secondary to kind of immersing myself in the moment. And then there was a breeze would come up, and it was blowing a couple of the leaves away. And then I'd lay them all back or whatever, and then I'd try again. And I just laugh at that, because it's like, this is out with my control. And you try not to attach to it. Of course, you do a little bit. And then eventually I'd nearly finished, and then a breeze came along and blew the lot away. And I just burst out laughing, and I left. I was, oh, it's too breezy to do this today. But that was honestly the best day I ever had in making land art. And I had nothing to show for it. But it was I managed to get to a place where I wasn't being so attached to it, and I was I was embracing the moment. And I'm not saying that's always the case. Sometimes it's frustrating. Sometimes you're often chasing the tide or getting a bit frustrated with the breeze, you know, because it does blow away what you're doing. But that's what the richness that's come from me is this as a mindful practice, and how it's changed the way I think about things and perceive things, and your connection to nature. For me, I really love this notion of non-duality. There is no separation between anything or anybody. It's quite an unusual way of seeing the world, but the authors and things I like to read, the podcasts I listen to, they reflect on that, and it like completely makes sense to me. So when I'm out in that environment, that sort of kicks in as well. I really feel that connection to that place, and cultivate that. Mm-hmm. And I really want to do this for others. You know, I want to be doing this. The workshops I've done with children and things, you think, well, yeah, I can earn half as much as I do doing a commercial photography job, but the quadruple the joy for the people, the other people, to watch these kids sort of coming up, and the glow they get when they manage to stack a pile of stones or they make a mandala on the ground. So, you know, that's really something I'm kind of looking forward to.
That's wonderful. It's simple, isn't it? And that idea, the idea of mindfulness and gratitude and nature, I'm all about this as well, so I'm totally getting everything you're saying here. And I do it in a different way, and I suppose we all do it in a different way. We find our own way of doing that. It's really nice to hear of another thing that it's accessible for everybody as well, I think. But when you were talking about gratitude and being in that moment, I think I was just recalling this morning, it's glorious here today, and there's really flat, calm seas, and it's just like, you know, one of those really sunny, calm days. And I was swimming this morning, and it's just, when I'm swimming in the sea, it's very much about being in that moment and being grateful for everything. And gratitude's it's a big way to happiness, isn't it? To be grateful for those little things, as you said. And I loved what you said about the leaves blowing away, and there was no result, but you enjoyed the process. And I think that's a lesson.
Still my favorite day of making land art. It seems crazy.
Yeah, but it's a lesson for photographers, for artists, for creatives, in any way, if you let go of the need for something to be beautiful, finished and perfect and to be shown and just enjoy that process, then, well, that opens doors, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's especially helpful for me because all my life I've been a show off, you know, like I'm always sort of going, look what I can do. You know, I was not sort of shy retiring and kid. I was like, oh, look what I've drawn, look what I've done. You know,
brilliant.
Like this look mum kind of thing is run right through my life. And my dad, you know, my dad was quite the sort of showman in his sort of manner. So I guess I sort of grew up a bit with that. But a part of me, I'm enjoying looking at that and trying not to be quite so attached, because at the end of the day, if I was going to really take that to its full conclusion, I wouldn't take a camera with me when I go out. And that is, you know, I love the process of capturing the thing as a photograph. And I think I'm thinking, is this just my ego going here and look what I can do again? It's another look, mum, what am I doing? But then I'm aware that the world needs, and, you know, people are given gifts of being artistically inclined. And I think, well, you know, that's what I've got. It would be crazy not to express it. But then I would like it if I could be a little bit released from the ego part of it. And there's a land artist friend of mine who I see a lot, because we're always at the same festivals and things. And I'm just about to go down to his Land Sand Stone Festival in Bridlington in a couple of weeks or so. And he says that he does a lot of workshops with young children, and he says he doesn't attach to what he's making. You know, he can just sort of walk away from that. He's really good at not letting himself get so involved. He can set himself aside. And I think it's almost like, you know, a good therapist is not saying, oh, that reminds me of my experience. You know, there's this notion of, you know, poaching onto somebody else's thing, you know, and making it about yourself, you know. So I love that. And I guess that's where I think the notion of workshops, of doing these things where you're just a facilitator and it's not about you. You give the magical tools. You let them, they're there, but you let that magic happen for each other person, which is lovely. Yeah. So, you know, but it's a challenge for me. You know, I can look at, you know, behind what I do, there's always this, ta-da, look what I did today, you know, and I'd like to kind of let go of that a little bit more.
I mean, I get the sense that it's not ego, that part of it isn't, and that it's something that maybe you need to document so you can put it out in the world, so you can help other people with it. Because I do sort of feel from you that you want to share with other people and children. Wow, I mean, don't children really need this at the moment in the world?
Yeah. So in fact, it was. I really got a taste of that when I went for a walk the other day with the dog, and before lockdown, I used to go, oh, right, well, I'll do my laps of the field that is behind our house. And it's a nice field. It's been laying fallow for many years. They're going to be building on it. So it's full of wildflowers and things. It's beautiful. But I would sort of walk the dog and go, right, that's me done. And I'll go home with the dog. And over lockdown, because everything kind of slowed down, you had to go, well, this is your only opportunity to be out there. It became like a longer walk. And it was getting longer and longer and spending more time sort of really looking, really absorbing what was in the environment. And now that seems to happen. So finish a busy day's shoot or something sometimes, and then I'll get down and I'll go, right, I'm going to walk all the way down the grounds. There's a grand house that's got grounds you can walk in there. And I walked through there, and there was the woman that passed me and sort of gave me that sort of barely acknowledged look up, you know, and storming past. And I thought, oh, she looks rather lost in her thoughts. Because I'm always kind of smiling away at people, hello, like this, you know. And then her daughter, I'm guessing it was her daughter, was followed behind. And she just looked so in pain. She looked so in pain and her head down, headphones on, and sort of like creeping through the shadows of the path, you know, like right into them, bashing into the trees and with her head down, not taking anything in. And I just felt nothing but, compassion for this youngster. And I thought, people need to remember to stop and to look, and it will, because we are not our thoughts. And I think especially at that age, You don't know that. You don't get that. That's something that comes when you're older, and you can learn to sort of go, that's a thought I'm having there. I'm going to lay that down. I'm going to be grateful for what's going on. And, you know, you're making a conscious decision how you perceive things, how you think of things. It can make a big difference. And I saw her, and I just, my heart went out to her, and I thought, I've got to do this stuff. I've got to keep the photography going. But I feel so like inside I'm going, how can you not be going and sort of trying to do workshops to get to help youngsters or anyone who's having a hard time, teach them mindfulness in nature? You know, we just so need it. We so need it right now.
The whole area of mental health, and particularly for teenagers, I think, and young people these days, I think it's such a hard time. I wouldn't want to be growing up in these days, to be honest with you. I'm kind of glad I grew up without social media, but I think it's tough for them, and I think it's challenging, and they're less connected to nature than they ever have been. And there's studies on this, and it's one of the things that's really important, isn't it? I mean, you're literally saving lives by doing this kind of work with mental health and mindfulness.
If we could just prioritize that a little bit more, it's amazing how, you know, we have this focus on GDP and you know, and you're like, surely, you know, where there's this focus on we've got to make a profitable nation, and you think, what is ever more important than to be happy? You know, like that's, you know, what do you, if you say, what do you want to be when you grow up? I'd say happy, you know, like that. And you know, people would sort of roll their eyes and say, oh, don't be silly. What do you want to do? What's the thing you're going to do? You're going to be doing to do that. And obviously, we find some things to do, but we don't prioritize happiness or sort of mental health in that way. And I think people aren't aware that you don't just sort of choose to be happy. I like the notion that you find the right ingredients. Over lockdown, I found, you know, you're worrying about one thing or another. You're thinking, oh, how am I going to, finances going to be? And I'm like, oh boy, how long is this going to last? How, you know, there's so many unknowns about it all. So I would walk in the field, and each day I'd be like, well, what am I grateful for? And I realized, my God, that actually has quite an impact on every other part of your life. And there's a wonderful author, Scottish author called David Hamilton. And I read a book of his, The Side Effects or The Five Side Effects of Kindness. And he talks a lot about gratitude. And he's a scientist. And he says, you know, you can watch you should talk about the telomeres in your body or something like that. And that it actually has a profound physical impact on your body when you practice gratitude and kindness. It literally changes your body. So I think, you know, you look at the state of so many things in the country, the NHS and things, and you think, why don't they prescribe people to be going out and walking and being in nature? It's not some panacea for a big problem, but for people who are suffering inside, you know, depression and things, it just seems like such a clear direction to give, and that it's not going to drain resources or something, you know.
And I suppose the more that we can do, you doing your little bit by providing these workshops, it's a great thing. It's a great thing. I love it. The big thing is it's accessible to everybody.
Well, that's the notion, that to do that. I mean, it's not something I've set up and been running yet. I have done these workshops because other people have asked in these situations, but I'm just in the process of trying to sort of get it so that I'm initiating them and looking at the format for how that can work and what the scenario is. I went round to a friend's, you know, these little synchronicities keep happening. I went round to a friend's house last year. And her son answered the door, and he went, oh, we're studying you at school. And I says, what do you mean? He says, oh, we're doing something about Lander. And I was like, oh, it'll be a guy called Andy Goldsworthy you'll be studying. And he says, no, it's you, it's you. And I'm like, oh, really? And this at the school, I guess the school teacher had seen some stuff I'd made on the, you know, local shared Facebook pages or something. And so she was showing the work and getting the kids to come go down to the beach to make things, you know, based on some of those. And so I got in touch with the school and with the teacher, and I says, would you like me to come along? So I end up going along, having those little things happen in just that way, you know. It's been wonderful.
But it's also like just doing something yourself, and the fact that you've got an Instagram account or a Facebook page, and you're showing, this is why probably I was trying to think why the photography of it is important, because that happened, they saw what you're doing. And sometimes I think we forget that we inspire people just by doing. So somebody sees like me swimming in the sea, and it's a great thing for your health and your well-being. And it maybe inspires them to think, well, actually, if she can do it, I'll do it. Or they see your land art and they go, well, actually, because I'm thinking now, actually, that's something that I could maybe think about, you know. And we inspire people just by doing something and sharing it. So I think that's probably why I was thinking the photography of it is important for you.
Yes.
Might not be for everybody, but I think for you it is.
Yeah, I love to do it properly, you know, to get it to work as well as I possibly can. So I think it's more maybe my only concern is my attachment to it, you know, and if I can learn to have less attachment to the images themselves and that sense. I mean, I have in the back of my mind, I have a lovely friend of mine, John Foreman, who's perhaps the most popular of land artists. He has this page, Sculpt the World. And I'd recommend people to have a look at that. And that he does nothing but making his own land art for himself, you know, entirely what he wants to make. And then he just sells them as prints online, or people can buy them any size, any shape, onto any surface or whatever.
Yeah.
So he just goes out day to day, doesn't really do much in the way of workshops. He just goes and makes what he chooses to. He's quite an inspiration to me in that sense. And I kind of think, you know, that would also be a nice way to explore working. So I'm hoping to have that side, you know, operating in that way as well.
Yeah, and the images are actually, they're beautiful. They're very mindful in themselves, the images, I think, and they're very peaceful in some way, delightful as well. I think it's just that there's a lot to the images of this work as well. So I think that everybody should go and have a look at your page. Shape Nature on Instagram and Facebook, is it?
Yes, I do now have a page for that. I didn't have one until sort of relatively recently. It's not been on the go for that long. I mean, and I have the other side of it is the just WinRAM is for the sort of more fine art photography side of things. But I mean, the Shape Nature one is the one that it's more inclined to go a little bit viral sometimes, you know, with the right image. It is nice sharing that. And there's a lovely community, you know, it's one of those, the blessing and the curse of the internet, but you know, the community that exists amongst the land artists and the sort of various festivals, that's become really strong, and we've all become really quite close and supportive of each other, and just helping each other out with the different festivals. That's also a lovely part of it, that this community that is growing really strong. It's just a joy to be able to be part of that and to meet people. You know, because most people, there's a kind of like, you know, you mention what you do and there's that nod and there's like, oh, that's a bit different. You know? So it's lovely when you can be around some people who get it, who pick up stones and go, look at this one. We're all got cars full of stones. I always come home from a trip to the beach and Krista and my wife will be like, are there more stones under the seats here? I'm like, yes, there's just a couple. Every time I come back from Harris, even my flight weight is overloaded. I've still got stones in there. Sorry, I shouldn't be doing that. I'll get some nasty messages. You must have taken stones from Shilabos. Yeah.
I think we've got plenty of stones here. I think
they are particularly beautiful. They are the granite and the nice rocks you have there are spectacular because they're so clean. It's a joy. The white sands. You know, the environment of working on Harris, and I've only made a couple of pieces ever on Harris, but what a joy, because there's a lot less dogs coming along and sort of walking through what you're doing, and I love that it's all washed away. That's a very key part for it to me, is again in sort of releasing the attachment to it, is it's just a photograph, there's nothing left, and that's important to me, because you know, if you're making any other kind of art, you're using up resources, all too often something from the petrochemical industry, if it's paints or whatever, it's hard to get away from. Yeah. So it's lovely to be somewhere where, you know, the only thing you take away is a sort of digital copy of what you're doing. And then, you know, either when you're there or just an hour or so afterwards, the tide has washed it away, you know, or in the forest, those leaves will just be, you won't even see what you've made in a day or so later. It just sort of very quickly degrades and returns. Yeah. And I love that part.
Oh, that's just wonderful. So, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing this with us. It's so different, and I'm sure a lot of people will be really grateful to hear about this. So, thank you for taking the
You're
time
welcome.
to.
You're welcome.